This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, we call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall do.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, how the hell are you? Justin Rosero coming at you live here on this Monday evening. It's been a while, as they say, since we've last spoken. I'm being in 2 weeks here. Of course, we had our Royal Rumble Philly trip, and then just had a busy week last week where we couldn't really join each other and chat about wrestling. But here we are tonight. So let me waste no further ado to bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. It has been quite a while, hasn't it? 14 whole days. Welcome to the longest-running episodic motherfucking gold standard, number 480. You know I'm going to say it, even though it's going to be like 2024. It is 20 to 500, just to let you know. Although maybe it'll be our Christmas episode in 2023 or something.
Probably, yes.
Let's talk now about that. We had a fun weekend in Philadelphia for the Royal Rumble weekend. Had a good crew, good bunch.
Yeah, as always, kind of
fine group of men.
It's always like the appetizer, kicks off WrestleMania season.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah, that was good. Had some cheesesteaks. Watched some NXT.
Yes.
Had some ice cream.
Oh my god. Two straight trips now to Philly. 2015, not only do we have a great we had a triple threat title match then, but we had maybe one of the greatest live matches ever that year. That was a Ring of Honor taping, if you remember, the great six-man, JR, between it was ACH, Cedric, and Seidel against AJ Styles and the Bucks. Mm-hmm. Funny that like half that match is in WWE now almost. And 3 years later, on Saturday night, we were treated to, of course, that awesome Gargano-Almas match, which many are considering. I mean, for Chad to say it's one of his three or four best matches of the decade says a lot. And then, of course, we had a much better Rumble than we had 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was an interesting back-to-back nights. Maybe two of the best like I've ever seen live.
Yeah.
I mean, Gargano-Almas may be the best match I've ever seen live, and it's up there. And the Royal Rumble is probably the best show I've seen from like top to bottom.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Live, so it was really cool. And looking forward, of course, to Mania in New Orleans. And we'll start kind of beating the drum now. If you are attending and you want to meet up with us, we have a pretty good group going. Probably no tailgate this year. I've been told that the Superdome does not have a good lot for it. But we are going to be doing some kind of big like bar gathering for the afternoon before Mania. So if you're heading down there and you want to sync up, let me know. We'll be gathering information as we get closer. So what's going on, Scott, since we last talked? Nearly broke my ankle.
I heard that story. I heard the story on one of our new shows.
So I recorded that, Talk and Pop with Jennifer Smith and Tim Capel. Kind of a different kind of interview than what I'm used to doing.
It was a very different interview, yes.
I talked about a lot of different things. But it was a fun time. I had a really good time. I think it's going to be a great show on the Pop feed. So check that out if you want to hear me talk. I talked some wrestling. Just life growing up, pro football cheerleaders, talked about that, talked about Josh Richter. So a lot in there that you can hear me chat about with them.
The critic.
Yes, the critic.
I think it's the most about that show I've ever heard in my life.
Probably. It was all about one thing.
30 minutes.
So we did that. But if you want the more in-depth story of my ankle situation, listen to the latest Jeff Learns Wrestling, where we looked at the main event from February 88. I told the really in deep detail what happened, my fall, and then the aftermath and the walk-in clinic, which is a shit show. So check out Jeff Warren's Wrestling for the full show. My foot's still sore, but I'm getting better. I'm there.
Good.
Almost. As long as I'm ready for basketball, I'll be happy.
Absolutely. We got a while, right? And probably a good...
about a month or so.
9 weeks? A month? I guess you play in March,
start
right?
Start toward the end of March, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So what? 6 weeks? 7 weeks? All right. That works out. Anyway, it's good that you're healthy. And check out that show. It's tremendous. They're both Tim and Jenny are very good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, tonight, Jenny, yes, we are back. And we've got an exceptional third member of the booth tonight making his big debut here on the Place to Be podcast. Let's bring him in.
Yeah, you might have heard him before at Place to Be Nation. He was joined at Kelly Nelson breaking down the was unreleased matches DVD set, I believe. He is pretty legendary in the internet wrestling community. Great Twitter follow and also great Facebook friend to all. He's a big member of our chats, and you catch him over at the our Vantage Point chat page as well. And he is, of course, the one and only Richard Land. Landy, how are you, sir?
Good evening, chaps. I'm very well, thank you.
Very good. It's
Good morning.
Good,
yes, technically.
Good, yes. Good early morning for you.
It's like you're in Fong Yang, you know. You're awake when all the events are going on, you know.
Yeah, but I'm used to it though after all this time.
Yeah. Very true. We want to thank you for staying up and joining us. It's been a while. We've tried to get this one in the books a couple times, and here we are, finally made it happen. Thrilled to have you, of course, as you're a big supporter of the site, big supporter of the show, and a big contributor as well. So I wanted to have you on.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
Of course, I wish it could have been under better circumstances, given the show we were forcing you to watch tonight.
I tell you, it's not. You know, watching it today, it probably could have been worse, but it's actually not too bad. So let's go back.
Okay.
Mr. Landy, you're going to be heading into our office here on 33rd and 7th in the Big Apple, for it is October 16th, 1987 at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Back in the house show circuit, and as we head down the fall, as we continue, we're in the fourth quarter, if you will, of 1987. And this show has some interesting twists and turns, not just wrestling, but announcing and aesthetics and all sorts of different stuff. So looking forward to it.
Indeed.
Again, the date is October 16th. It's a Friday, JR. Mm. It's Friday evening.
Exciting. I mean, I like these weekend shows, you know, a little better than the Monday or Tuesday or whatever.
Exactly.
I enjoy the Friday night in the garden. Seems kind of fun. And we do have some notes here from Mr. Greenhouse putting up to work.
Well,
I was going to do
the show. The roster's still floating around, though. Of course, split in threes.
It's been a while. I forgot how this goes. It's been,
I know, yeah. Oh, no, we know Greeny's got a bevy of notes.
Yes,
we'll hop on those shortly. But anyway, as you know, Landy, as you've heard, the roster – Vince seems to always split the roster in threes back in those days, of course.
Yes.
A third of the roster here. Another group was at the Jefferson Civic Center in Birmingham, Alabama. And we don't have a full card, according to Graham Cawthon on the history of WWE.com, but it did include Brutus Beefcake. So the barber was – in Birmingham, of course, deep in NWA territory at that time. The other third of the roster was actually in a pretty cool place, the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, otherwise known as the Old Igloo. And I think this card shows, JR, why this show is so unique.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your card. Steve Lombardi pinned Jerry Allen. By the way, 8,978, which is not a sellout because that was an NHL arena that seated like 19,000, so not a sellout. George Steele defeated Bob Orton Jr. by countout. SD Jones pinned Terry Gibbs. King Harley Race pinned the Junkyard Dog. The Honky Tonk Man, the Intercontinental Champion, pinned Ricky Steamboat by using the tights for leverage. Demolition defeated the Rougeaus. Sensational Sherry successfully defended her women's title against Debbie Combs. Any relation to your pal there, Ray? Maybe. Spelled the same. Ken Patera defeated King Kong Bundy by countout. And Hulk Hogan successfully defended his World Wrestling Federation title against the One Man Gang. So three of the four belts were in this building. And as you know, JR, we're tipping our hand a little bit, we don't have the Hart Foundation on our show, so they must have been in Birmingham. So, yes, you get slightly skeptical when you have an MSG house show that has no title matches. But in the past, and I was looking through the cards in the past that we've done since January of 85, and we've had four or five shows without a title, but we've had like great guys and like, you know, the title contenders, you know, title holders like Hogan or whatever would be in tags. So it was okay. But knowing who we had on this card, I was a little skeptical. So I'm curious how we get through it tonight.
Well, I'm wondering why they sent them to Pittsburgh and not the Garden. I mean, I know this isn't a matinee, so you couldn't do double duty, but it's an interesting decision, to send them there. It almost makes you wonder if, like, moving to a Friday night. Well, I don't know. Do you remember last month? Did they announce that this was on a Friday night? So I was curious if they, like, bumped it and moved it and then couldn't get the guys there or something.
I don't know. I don't remember it being.
I don't think they rescheduled it. No.
Any thoughts, Landy, about why they would have had that crew in Pittsburgh? It just seems odd to me that they wouldn't be at the Garden, but.
I think because there's no title matches, they put a special gimmick match to make it build up the crowd, which they have, which you're probably going to say it says it's a sellout crowd. So
yeah, because it didn't matter in the end. Sold out anyway.
We got Hogan in the gang in September.
Yeah, remember, we didn't get the rematch, though, because they went to the Meadowlands instead.
Right, exactly. So we could have gotten a rematch there. Maybe because we had a cage match on this card already.
Yeah.
And it was weird to, like – and I'm not even a fan of where they put that match on this card. I'm going to talk – we'll talk about that when we get to that match. I thought they should have just shuffled things up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But in any event, there's where the rest of the roster was on this Friday evening. Let's dive now into Mr. Greeny's notes.
All right. Since our last conversation, which was the October 3rd, 87 Science Main Event, we saw the 10-10 Superstars of Wrestling. Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Andre the Giant and Bobby Heenan, where they announced the main event of a brand new pay-per-view called Survivor Series. Scott, we'll be talking about that in a couple weeks.
Yes.
Of course, looking forward to that one as always. And that's it, actually, for the build-up for this one. So not much going on in the kind of 10 days or so since the main event. So here we are.
Yeah, no, we had a good short stretch here, so not much to get into. We'll have a lot to get into when we come back here next month because we'll have, obviously, a house show before we actually hit Ridgefield, Ohio.
All right, so, yeah.
Ready? No, go ahead.
Let's do it. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, let's fire it up. We head back to the Garden as we edge toward the end of the year. Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby Heenan welcome us in, set up the night. And then we head to the opener, and that is taking on our good old friend Outback Jack taking on. I just wanted to skip his name altogether.
Sorry, Lee.
God, Jose Estrada. This is thankfully though. This is Outback Jack's final MSG appearance, so we're done with the dude from Australia. But he does hang around for a while, right? I think we looked that up. I think he's around into 88.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's not
about 6 more months.
Yeah. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. But it's the last we'll see of him. It looks like May 7th, 88 was the last televised match against a team of Brady Boone and Steve Blackman in a loss to the Islanders. So there you go. Excitement there.
There you go.
Yeah. His brief career concluded at the only wrestling event ever held at Kissimmee, Florida's Tupperware Convention Center, May 15th.
What, does the roof come off?
Right. Well, keeps everything fresh. Lost a rematch to Greg Valentine, so... from a match 3 nights earlier. So there you go. I'm sorry. It says the outcome of his rematch with Greg Valentine, who had pinned him 3 days prior in Columbus, remains a mystery. Any insight there, Landy? Do we know? Have you ever seen the final match of Outback Jack? It sounds like we don't know the finish.
I'm guessing Graham's side just doesn't have the result, and that's why it says that.
Yeah, and I'm guessing he lost, is my prediction.
Yeah, I'm sure Valentine broke his leg.
I do want to see this May 7th, 88. I wonder if that's in the set we procured years ago, Scott, of the Superstars, the six-man with Outback, Brady Boone, and Steve Blackman against the Islanders.
Oh, yeah, the match that it was Blackman's tryout before he got – the hell did he get?
Well, that was 89, right? I think he comes in a few times. I think 89 is when he gets sick.
89 is when he got, like
– yeah.
Was it hepatitis or something?
No, it was something worse than that. It was like Africa. He like caught
Zika or something.
Yeah, so it was something like bad like that.
All his muscle mass. He practically, I think I remember right, didn't it say like he had pretty much had to start from scratch working out and everything?
I think so.
It was rough. Yeah.
He contracted malaria and dysentery while wrestling in South Africa.
Wow. Dysentery. That's rough.
Bedridden for 2 years. He was being considered for a full-time contract in 89. It was also, that match is notable, it's the only time the Islanders competed as a team of three with Siviafi as the third member. So it's a big match right there.
Wow.
Big time six man.
It's online. You can find it.
Is it? I don't know. I'll have to go search it out. I don't think I've ever seen it. How's Blackman look? Does he look the same?
Except his crazy mullet.
Oh, he's got a mullet, not a flat top? It's tremendous.
Yeah.
Personality. You personality. All right,
here we go. So we open up with the hot rematch from the Blockbuster back in June, if you remember these two battled then as well. Jack's been relegated all the way to the opener against a jobber we all know he's worse than, in Estrada. Jack ambles out for his ridiculous kangaroo music, and some fans care, but most seem pretty indifferent. Bobby says he should shake hands at ringside and continue right out the back door. Don't even stop in the ring. We got some stalling to start. Gorilla says Estrada shouldn't have much trouble outsmarting Jack. And then he says thanks to his experience. He clarifies, but you know what he meant. Estrada baits Jack in and lands a sucker shot, but Jack quickly comes back with some right hands and a hip lock and a slam. Jack goes to a side headlock as the crowd chants boring right away. Bobby Gorilla talking about Andre and Hogan. Gorilla thinks Andre's either semi-retired or in real bad shape or could be training. And Bobby says he's just waiting on Hogan to give him that rematch. I like how Gorilla... He could be one of these three things. Yes, the Gorilla. Thank you. Those are the three options that could be in play.
Yes.
Estrada finally breaks the hold, but Jack cuts him down the clothesline, gets a nice throw slam, and a back to the headlock. Gorilla mocks Bobby's jacket as Jack releases and hits a shoulder block on Estrada, but Jose stops him with a forearm. Estrada follows with a club off the middle rope and works Jack over for a bit with some simple strikes. Gorilla's just trolling Bobby as Estrada slings Jack to the floor, and Jack then makes his way back in, argues with the ref, and gets drilled from behind. Jose keeps hammering away until Jack catches him with a knee lift and some right hands, and then Jose comes back and tries for a suplex, but Estrada blocks and hits one of his own. Jose's busted open by the eye and begs off as Jack starts to really beat on him with slams and kicks, and then hits a power slam for the win. I thought Jack looked all right here. He's actually kind of improving a little bit. Like, he looks less stiff and awkward and more in tune than he did when we first saw him, but like we mentioned before with Stevie Afi, too little too late. Like, the guy just wasn't ready when the time came, and now we're past it, you know.
Yeah.
He had his chance. He's done. So Estrada helped carry things along. He had that nasty cut, too, which added to things. And Jack's power slam wasn't bad. Much better than that stupid boomerang club blow he used to do. So I actually want a star on this thing. I didn't think it was that bad. But I'm glad to be done with Jack, Scott. What do you think of this?
Your match length, 9:44, which at times felt like 39:44. Yeah. But I mean, this match is boring. I gave it what did I give it? Does it matter what I gave it? I gave it a half star. It was horrendous. Outback Jack never really knew what to do in the ring. He always looked clueless and fumbling, and there was no charisma there. I don't know how far they were expecting this guy to go, but he just had nothing to give. There was nothing to give here. And I mean, Jose Estrada, I think, was booking that night, because as the show progresses, he's back. They show him backstage in the hallway often. So I wonder if like the main bookers were maybe in Birmingham or Pittsburgh with the with the title guys. And
yeah, he might have just been agent, you know, road agent for the night or something.
Yeah, because Pedro was there a lot. Yeah. Yeah, Pedro was there backstage a lot. They show a lot of hot shots of him. They show a lot of inside stuff at the Garden that you normally don't see. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Vince was there, because I'm as far as I've heard through history, Vince has never missed an MSG house show. So I'm sure Vince was there. But it just seemed very different tonight in terms of camera angles and different stuff to look at. And Jack is just a mess. I mean, he just doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah, there's really nothing more to say here. The entrance theme is terrible. That Dingaloo Dingy or whatever fucking horrendous, stupid place he's from. Dingaloo Winky or whatever the hell it's called. But
I don't think it's Dingaloo Winky. But yes, that's
whatever. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter where he's from. Anyway, he's a mess, and it's a shame because he seemed like a nice guy. But he's just over his head. He was over his head. He was the kind of guy, if this was 2017 or 2018, he would have spent a lot of time in NXT. Let's put it that way.
He would have never left NXT.
Yeah.
He made it one tough enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's not good. He's not good. Stinks. So good riddance for this one, Landy.
There's an old Australian stockman lying gone. He gets himself up on the one elbow and he turns to his mates
who are gathered around. Seriously, how do you pump the crowd up with this guy?
Watch me while the bees feed, mate. Watch me while the bees feed. They're a dangerous breed, mate. So watch me while the bees feed. All together now, tiny kangaroo down sport. Tiny kangaroo down.
Just read the can't wrestle. Tiny kangaroo down sport. Tiny
kangaroo down. I'm going to study this so I can talk to Stacey at WrestleMania.
Ha ha ha! Maybe TM61, or right? Is that the team in NXT? TM61 yeah. or whatever. Maybe they should come out to this. Anyway, Landy, rough match here, and it's good to see poor Outback Jack head out the door.
Yeah, what a way to start. Before I say anything, though, I have an announcement about Outback Jack. Today, well, yesterday for me, February 12th, is his birthday. He's 60 today for you.
Happy birthday, Jack.
I know. I saw that on Wikipedia today by accident when I was researching. But, yeah.
That's fitting. We're talking about him, his final appearance on his birthday. Not bad.
Yeah. But, yeah, like you said, the ultimate rematch, nobody wanted to see. And I think you've covered it all. There's nothing else to say about Outback Jack. He's horrible. He won't be missed. Let's move on.
As long as you get that wallaby down.
Nice and succinct. We might be the only show that actually honored him on his birthday today. So. He should have had a tag team partner named Cockatoo Cool. Maybe he'd have lasted longer if he had a tag partner named Cockatoo Cool. Oh God!
That was Carlito's original name.
Maybe that's what Too Cool and Rikishi could have been. Cockatoo Cool.
Yeah, there you go. No, that would have been Val Venus and Too Cool.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Just like Cock Rob. All right.
Val Venus.
Let us move on to our next match, which is going to be slightly better than this one. Go ahead.
Before that, though, Bobby Heenan stands up, delivers a message to the Fink, promotes all the local TV airing in the New York City area tomorrow. Bobby then gets up and hops in the ring and welcomes out. I like how Bobby jumped up too early, clearly, because then Fink had to promote the shows. But Bobby comes in and brings out Nick Bockwinkel, who he puts over big time. Bobby says Nick is going to be joining Gorilla. Nick hits the ring and hugs Bobby to booze and heads to the announce table as Bobby leaves. Gorilla welcomes Nick to the WWF and hopes he'll add some insights and analysis. And Nick says he will be objective. Of course, Nick Bockwinkel, four-time AWA World Heavyweight Champion for a total of 2,809 days, three-time AWA Tag Champion with Ray Stevens in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. He's in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum, ranked number 18 of the 500 best singles wrestlers of the PWI years in 2003, and of course, a WWE Hall of Famer class of 07 as well. What's going on for old Nick? Of course, former WCW commissioner as well, Nick Bockwinkel, from the mid-90s. So we can talk about it as we go on if you want to kind of work it into your comments of these matches. But up next is the Killer Bees taking on the Dream Team. And I guess it is a night of rematches, of course. This is a rematch from the big – oh, no, I'm sorry. Was that the Rougeau's Battle of the Dream Team, the big event? No, it was the Bees, right? I'm mixing that up. I should have looked it up.
The old Dream Team.
Right. Okay. Yeah, the old Dream Team. The Bees did, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
There you go. All right, the poor new Dream Team back again for another aimless tag match. Greg Valentine's is chugging along with this slob Dino Bravo. Johnny V is with them, has a bandana wrapped around his hair, which is just starting to grow back from the shaving. The Bees get a nice ovation, and they could use a key win to get back in the picture. Gorilla says V's been a detriment to the Dream Team since the nightmare at the Rosemont. Nick challenges that and asks what the Dream Team themselves have said to said about their relationship with V. Blair and Hammer open up, and they trade some arm work as Gorilla says Dino usually starts for their team. Brunzell tags in and keeps control of the arm as Nick and Gorilla just jabbing each other. Hammer escapes and tags Bravo, but Brunzell uses his speed to dodge a strongman and grabs a side headlock. Gorilla says Hammer takes 10 to 15 minutes to get going, and Nick says some guys are slow starters and some are fast finishers. Blair tags in and gets a roll-up for two as Nick talks about his relationship with Bobby. Brunzell is back in working the arm, and then Blair sneaks in and hits a high knee to Bravo as Gorilla dumps on Bobby's shitty 1987. Bravo slugs Brunzell and turns the tide, tagging Hammer, who comes off the top with a club blow. Hammer slugs away with fists and chops and goes for covers where he can. Hammer then hoists Brunzell up and drops him viciously across the top rope, neck first, in a real nasty spot. Bravo tags in, and the Dream Team double teams until Bravo takes Brunzell over with a gut wrench and gets a leg drop for two. Hammer tags in and keeps punishing Brunzell, going to an abdominal stretch and then releasing and tagging Bravo, who goes to a bear hug. Brunzell claps free, but Bravo tags Hammer, who gets an atomic drop. Brunzell blocks a figure four, but the ref misses him, making the tag, and the Dream Team keeps control. Hammer throws him to the floor. Out there, Blair sneaks down, and they go into the ring and put their masks on. As Nick questions what's going on, he gets real pissy with Gorilla, who's defending it. Blair comes in the ring and cleans house to a pop. Blair grabs a sleeper on Hammer, but Bravo breaks it up. Hammer then gets a back suplex, but as Bravo ties up the ref, the B swap spot again as Johnny V's bitching about it from the floor. Brunzell rolls up Hammer, but Bravo makes a save. Dream Team double slam Brunzell, but as Hammer goes to the figure four, Blair comes off the top with a sunset flip and gets the win to a huge pop. Fun match with pretty sound work on both sides. I like the heat segment, and I enjoyed the B antics. You know, it's not very face-like for them to do. Kind of want you guys to take on this whole thing. And I like Nick and Gorilla on commentary, especially at the end. Nick is like, he's like a more refined Jesse, you know? He's really jabbing and prodding Gorilla and busting him up on things, but he's kind of right in what he's saying, but he's not as bombastic as Jesse. So I thought it was an interesting dynamic. The Dream Team falters again. The Bs get the key win we talked about. I went 2.5 stars on this one, Landy.
I went as generous as you. I just thought star and a half for this. Dino Bravo is horrible. I can't stand him here. I think they're wasting Greg Valentine in this team. But thankfully, it is near the end of it. And the Bs, they've sort of had their run now, I think. I mean, they don't really do much more after this. They have one more big thing, which... coming up, but that's about it. And then they just sort of drift away for the next year as the new teams like Strikeforce, Demolition are taking over. But I didn't think the crowd were into it too much either until the ending, you know, when they did the masks confusion bit, which it's a fun spot, which it gets the crowd going, but it's like you say, it's not something that you'd see the baby faces doing normally, but I don't know.
it just felt like real hokey and forced. Like, I don't know. I guess they figured, all right, I don't know. It's kind of like the kids would be into it or something. I don't know. It's fine. It does not seem like a face thing at all. And it's just kind of shady, but it puts Gorilla in a tough spot because as we know, he's like, he'll always defend the faces no matter what during this time frame. So it makes him look dumb. It kind of ruins his credibility too in many ways because he's out there defending this stuff and Bockwinkel's just like calling him out like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, it's like, what is going on? And Gorilla's just defending it. And Valentine just looks a lot like he looks like a lost puppy out there. Like, it's such a waste to him. He looks like he's supposed to kill himself slugging out there with Bravo. Just let it go. Just let it go. What do you think, Scott, of this one? Oh, were you done, Andy?
No, that was all I had. Well, okay. About Bockwinkel, I think it takes a while to fit in. I mean, his commentary, I don't think, fits as well with the WWF-type matches. You need more an over-the-top commentary team, if you know what I mean. Come across as a bit slow and boring when he's been too serious on matches like this and some of the later ones we'll see.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it was good if he's like reserved just for these shows. Like, I'm not sure how much TV he does, but like, I can't imagine him being like an A-list guy for them just because of that reason. He's really not as animated and bombastic enough as a Jesse or a Bobby that you need out there, even a Johnny V, who Bockwinkel's a better announcer than him, but he's much more just vocal and loud. I do like Nick, but yes, I agree with you 100%, Landy. It's not the best fit with what the presentation was. And, it's a lot of talking, so it was like you're really trying to listen more than like Gorilla and Al and Bobby, who kind of quip more. Bockwinkel's like starting like long conversations, you know, during these moves. So yeah, there's more to it.
I gave it 2 stars. I was saying talking today. I just my general thoughts on Bockwinkel. He's probably one of my favorite guys, wrestlers as a fan ever. Like for the our GWWE project, if we did, obviously he's not my top 100 because he didn't wrestle here. But if we were doing top 100 of all time, I'll be honest with you, he probably would have been in my top 15. That's how much I respect Doc Winkle as a wrestler, one of the greatest heels in the history of the business. I love the inside hug that him and Bobby have, because I mean they've had such a great career together. They kind of made each other in the 70s, so I thought that was really neat. But I think the refreshing thing early on in the match is that when Gorilla's dealing with guys like Bobby and these other heels, he can just summarily say a blanket fact, and then they just roll with it. They don't defend it. But Bockwinkle, Nikki really, like, calls him out, and he really kind of embarrasses Gorilla through a lot of this match.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he dropped, like, I forgot who it was. It might have been Bravo, who, by the way, looked fucking horrible. Yes. What was with the hair? He looked like a cross-dressing Johnny V. I don't know what the hell was wrong with him. He had, like, the worst hair ever. He was actually wearing Johnny V's hair because Johnny V had no hair. But, there was a move where I think it was Bravo, like I think he stun gunned one of the two. Maybe it was Brunzell on the top rope. And Gorilla goes, he should have been disqualified, ref. And normally Bobby will just like say something stupid or whatever. But Nick goes, well, why? Well, because it's, you know, it's an illegal move. He goes, no, it's not. Well, the referee can make that distinction. No, Gorilla, he can't. It's not illegal. Like, he was, like, legitimately telling Gorilla, you're an idiot.
Right.
He's really what he was telling him.
Well, it makes you wonder, too, like, if that costs him at all. Like, I don't know. Maybe Gorilla was into it. I don't know. But he definitely was, like, way more, you know. Like, Bockwinkle today would be, like, if he was a teenager, would be that annoying shit on a message board that just plays every little pedantic, angle on what you're saying. Just, like, semantics up the ass. Like, that would be Nick Bock. Well, technically, you know. Yeah, you know, I was like, that would be him on the fucking message boards. But yeah, no, I agree.
Tom McGee matches.
Yes.
I mean, he was ready to just like, I'm sure Gorilla in the back of his mind's like, dude, chill the fuck out. You know, I'm the good guy. The fans aren't supposed to care about logic. I'm supposed to be cheered. You're supposed to be booed. Move on. And Nick's like, no, I don't think that way. It was really great, actually. I enjoyed it. It was very refreshing, actually. But again, I agree with you, Landy, that towards the back end, he started getting too, too conversational, and it wasn't like most. I mean, look, most house show matches can use that if it's like. I mean, like if Bockwinkle was doing the Estrada, Kinkaloo Dinkaloo match there, he probably would have been fine because nobody gave a shit. But this match was very good with three of the four good workers, and then bloated Bravo. You kind of needed to pay attention to the match. Mm. That would have been better if for that first match where nobody really gave two shits, you know? Having said that, I agree. Like, Gorilla tries to use this whole, anytime the baby, and he does it through like that for the next like 4 years. Gorilla always uses the whole, you know, the baby faces can do it. Well, you guys don't mind if the heels do it, I suppose. So why can't, you know, and it's like, well, you can't really bitch then kind of thing. And that's why I don't know if I'm a fan of the whole putting the masks on. I think that was a bit I think that was a bit over the top for them, you know. I don't know if it would have worked or not. So, but I gave it 2 stars. The match overall is good. You could tell Valentine just could really give two shits. He really does not care anymore. I mean obviously not surprised that he said you know, get me back in singles. I can't do this. I'm not carrying that. I mean, right. Beefcake was one thing, but I'm not carrying this freaking slug around.
Well, it's not going anywhere. Like, it's one thing if you're carrying the guy, if you're at least getting pushed, you know, or like in the title, like they're just floating aimlessly and he could be much better utilized elsewhere. And it's clear, like, I mean, he's so good that even when he's checked out, like, he's still fine, you know, like his match is still okay. But it's clear he's just done with this and he should be done with it. I mean, he's been with Bravo now since April, since March, whatever, going nowhere. I mean, I'm curious what their record even is. I can't imagine they won many matches.
Right. Yeah. No, it's not good. And it's evident.
Basically a tag team for, like, since with Beefcake, so over 2 years by this point, just tag teams all the time. So.
And we get it, Gorilla. They lost to WrestleMania 2. Get over it. Jesus Christ. Nobody cares anymore. Greg Valentine's career hasn't been flushed on the toilet because he lost in Chicago.
That's what they make it like. I mean, one loss, you know, like, it's like Gorilla has not stopped talking about it. It's almost 2 years he's been talking about it. You know, it's a fucking, like, he's not nonstop. Oh, the Nightmare on the Horizon, the Nightmare on the Rosemont, the Nightmare on the Rosemont. By the way, the Bees fought the Funks at the big event. It was the Rougeaus and Dream Team, so correction there.
Uh-huh.
Well, it wasn't it, did Iron Mike Sharp replace Terry?
No. It was Jimmy Jack and Dory, I think, wasn't it?
Was Dory still here by then?
I mean, yeah, it was...
Yeah,
it was Dory and Jimmy Jack.
It was Dory, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like the Bees and Dream Team fought at some point. I don't know when. I feel like we've seen it. I'm sure we have.
I'm sure we have.
All right, so that's it
but
for that.
Anyway, it's a mess. And Bravo is just terrible. He's like overacting, and he's like flopping around with his fucking gut. And he's atrocious. He's absolutely atrocious. Anyway, Bees win. I don't know if it does anything for them at this point, but if a team had, I mean, this would have been a good match for a draw if you had to have one, but
No, it wouldn't, because then it'd been 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah,
good point. Oh, by the way, your time was 10:57.
No, so God, yeah, I can't imagine doubling that. I mean, I didn't mind it. Like, I didn't mind the heat segment. I did give it a decent grade, but I couldn't have done another 10 minutes of it. I'm all set with that. That would have been probably five more Bravo, which I'm good with.
Yeah. No, the right team went over. Yeah. The bees won. So
okay. All right, anyway, let's get to our next match here.
Yes.
Which features the last final appearance of Ivan Putski in the MSG until I'm sorry, fuck that up. It's his first appearance of Ivan Putski since July of 1985, as he takes on Iron Mike Sharp. And fuck, we are back in the dregs of 1985. We haven't seen Sharp in a while, but they drag him out here and they somehow dig up Putski too. The crowd's fired up though, shitting all over Sharp and giving a big pop to the returning Polish power, who looks to be crafted from leather at this point. Gorilla Nick debate the semantics. I know, right? Pills and leather, that's about it. Gorilla Nick debate the semantics of Sharp calling himself Canada's greatest athlete. Sharp stalls and then two pose for a bit. We get a brief lockup and then break as Nick and Gorilla talk about buying property in warm climates. Putski uses his power to dominate Sharp, sending him bailing to regroup. Iron Mike returns and tries for full Nelson, but Putski powers free as Gorilla calls out Sharp's never-healing forearm. Iron Mike tries two shoulder blocks but can't budge Ivan, and then he whiffs on a terrible dropkick attempt. Putski buckles Sharp down with a knee, knuckle hold and stomps his hands, sending Iron Mike back to the floor. Sharp returns and jams a thumb to the throat, starts to choke and club away, and then whiffs on a charge to the corner and slams to the post shoulder first. Putski clobbers Sharp, hits the hammer for the win. This stunk. Putski did nothing. Sharp bumped around, stalling and grunted. A waste of time for guys going nowhere. And it shows you, too, that over 2 years, Sharp is just shit the bed, because this probably would have been, like, an 18-minute match in 1985. Remember they were giving him all that time?
Mm.
And he would stall for, like, the first 10 minutes and then wrestle for 10. But for this one, it's a much quicker. But, I mean, Putski just he's got nothing. I mean, he's just useless, rawhide-looking fucking idiot.
rawhide.
So, yeah, he's done. A lot of people are done here. I went big old Dutteroo on this one, Scott.
Yeah, so did I. This is terrible. Why they're bringing Ivan Putski back? Clearly, Dr. Zahorian had a busy evening backstage. So they probably shouldn't have had many fucking cameras in the hallways, because he's not the only one. For those that are jumping all over him winning the Juiced Award, believe me, there's more candidates to come.
Stiff competition tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, this is terrible. Putski's fucking awful. He stole he stole C.V. Appy's tights for this match. He's horrendous. Why he's here, I don't understand. I mean, cheap Polish pop? I mean, I don't get it. It's not like he's going to go anywhere.
Well, maybe they felt that maybe they did feel a little bit that the star power was down a bit on this card and they brought him in to pop. I don't know how much longer
like
around,
it did. It almost felt like a nostalgia show tonight. Like, I felt like half the guys on this card you could have seen, like, in 1976. So, I mean, you know. Yeah, this match is the shits. It's terrible. Your runtime was 5:34, thank God. Probably about 5:04 too long. It was really bad. And
I don't think he stays around too much longer, because it looks like he's done in 87. So, yeah, I think it's a
run
for
him. A brief comeback.
Yeah, I doubt. I mean, you would have figured if he was sticking around, he would have been at Survivor Series on some fucking team, most likely. Anyway.
He's done on November 25th in Providence. Loses to Mike Sharp. Big rematch.
There you go. Out the door with the leather thing. I'm going to be succinct like you, Landy. Not much more to say here. An abysmal match, and goodbye, Putski, you slug.
Yeah, triple dud for this match. You had the same notes as me. It just seemed like a nostalgia for, I don't know, for the MSG crowd, maybe. Him getting a win, just in like his other matches are normally putting over people like Hercules and guys like that on the other house shows. So I don't know if this was just like a nostalgia thing for the Garden, but.
And I mean, he just does nothing. Like, he loses matches to Frenchie Martin, like Ron Bass. He has a little thing with Valentine and a little thing with DiBiase, who I think.
Virgil.
I think DiBiase might have been the guy they were bringing him in to maybe put over, because it looks like you're supposed to have a few matches with him, and DiBiase gets subbed out, and then they do fight here. So it looks like maybe that was the original plan. So, yeah. Anything else, Landy, on the Polish power?
Well, I'm curious how old he was at this point, and he's 46 that brought him in.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand why he's, like you said, why is he, what was the point, basically. But, and Sharp, I'm Mike Sharp, he's like a foot taller than him. So him selling all this silly, crazy stuff for him just looks stupid when he's, like, a giant compared to him.
Look. And we don't even have Jesse calling him Paduski, so it doesn't it's not nearly as fun.
He's 70. He just turned 77 on January 21st, so that would mean...
Yeah, Landy said he was 46.
So he's so he's 46. Yeah, too old.
Yeah.
I mean, for him, yeah. Too old. He's done. He's got nothing in the tank. I don't get it. And good for him, he's still alive when you look at him. I mean, you don't know how sure he would have made it past 1997, let alone 2017. So, good on him. The leather skin has held up well, I'm sure. Anything else, Richard?
No, that's it. That's it for Putski.
Okay.
No more talk about Putski.
Oh, my God. According to Wiki, it says, his final appearance was in 1987, teaming on television with Junkyard Dog and superstar Billy Graham in tags. Oh, good grief.
Yeah, not good.
Oh, yes.
That's unpleasant.
A lot of ugliness. All right.
Well, the superstar match, it was like literally about 10 seconds. They both put bear hogs on whoever they were facing, the jobbers, and that was it. So it's all right if you've got a spare 30 seconds that much.
Probably nervous about both having heart attacks.
So, Gas and Gassier should be their name.
They're both still around, so.
Gas somehow. And Gassier.
The gas was flowing. A lot of gas going in, and then they were gassed quickly in the match. So.
Yes.
All right.
What do we.
Next up, we have an interesting match with the newly turned face Paul Orndorff taking on Ravishing Rick Rude, who we saw on recent. Shows as well. Interesting match here. The twice spurned Paul Orndorff back to me in a face, battling the Heenan family again, and his replacement and newcomer in Rick Rude. A good even match on paper. Rude and Bobby strut out to boos, and those turn to cheers as Oliver Humperdinck leads out Mr. Wonderful. Rude shits on the New York City fans and starts to strip for the ladies. Nick says Orndorff has an identity crisis as Paul hops on the mic and challenges Rude to a pose down, which he gets a big pop. Fink makes it official and says Rude is up first. He disrobes and does a standard biceps pose to boos. Orndorff then takes off his robe and does a Hogan-type arm pose, and the crowd pops big. Rude disrobes and does a standard bicep pose again, and then Rude then shows off his abs, and Gorilla Nick talk about his resemblance to Tom Selleck. Paul then gets his second pose and shows off his full upper body and thighs. Fink asks the crowd to vote, and of course Rude gets booed out of the building, and Orndorff gets a ton of cheers. Nick tries to rationalize that, but it's a losing battle. Orndorff jumps Rude at the bell, and it's all over him with a flurry and pin attempts to start the match. Nick talks about how to be focused and execute well in the ring. He can't be sloppy. Rude regroups with Bobby and heads to the back where Paul chokes him until Rude goes to the eyes. Rude clubs and hammers away with aggressive strikes and poses for the fans, which Gorilla and Nick both agree is a waste of time. Rude gets a suplex for two and then goes to the chinlock, but Paul powers out as Nick calls Oliver a court jester. Rude yanks Paul back into the chinlock, but Paul flips free and hits a shoulder block. Rude cuts him off with a hard knee to the gut and then goes up top and lands a punch off the top rope for two, but he tries another sloppy, cocky cover. Orndorff ducks a clothesline and gets a cross body for two, but Rude pops up and levels Paul with a forearm. Rude hammers away some more, trying for pin covers with legit attempts before going to the chinlock again. Gorilla congrats a senior WWF producer for an award he's receiving. Orndorff stands up and drops back, crashing Rude to the floor, but Rude then dodges an elbow drop and starts to choke away. Nick says Paul isn't shining very well, but Orndorff turns a tide with a backdrop. Nick thinks Rude may be hurt bad. Paul stomps and punches away and lands in a hard clothesline in the corner, and then peppers and drops Rude with right hands. Paul goes to the top, but Rude gets too far away, and he just hops back down and lands a back suplex instead. Bobby hops on the apron. Paul decks him, and Nick gets up and goes to check on Bobby, which is funny. Gorilla's shitting all over that. As Paul backdrops Rude, Bobby pulls Rude to the floor, but Oliver hooks Bobby from behind, and Paul slugs him in the face. Bobby gets a chair and just wallops Orndorff across the back with it and then pulls him to the floor. Rude's hurting in the ring but ends up with a count-out win, even though Paul's basically halfway in the ring at 10, which is weird. The crowd did not like that one at all, but Rude soaks it in and heads off with the win. Orndorff grabs the mic and promises to put Bobby Heenan down permanently. I thought it was pretty fun, especially the pose down. I thought that helped build the heat and get the crowd into it. They kept it moving, too, which was good since they match up well, had a nice, easy flow. And I like the end, as Heenan gets his revenge and lands a nice chair shot. It was a good way to see this keep going, keep brewing. I thought both men looked good. I went 2.5. Landy, what's your thoughts on the match, as well as Orndorff's face turn and feuding with Bobby again? Like, I don't know, what did you think of that whole thing?
It was like it's recycling. Like they have nothing to do with Orndorff in the as part of the Heenan family. It seems so. They just turned him again, which we've seen it before. But I suppose they made it a bit more different, bringing in Rude as his replacement, the guy with the body. And yeah, but it didn't last too long. Like, I don't. Orndorff was gone not too long, like after Survivor Series, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so.
And but the pairing with Humperdinck, I don't get that. Humperdinck just doesn't fit. I mean, what did Bockwinkel keep a card yesterday?
The card yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a curious pairing. I don't know if they were just trying to give him a stable because they didn't really have any face managers with stables, or if they just thought Orndorff needed the rub a little bit to get over again as a face. Perhaps, you know, maybe they thought like he's been a heel for so long, he would need someone aligned with him. I don't know. It is a weird decision.
Yeah, because I don't remember Humperdinck ever doing, besides when he introduced him as his manager. That was they didn't do anything else, you know, after that. So, but as for this match, I went 2.5 stars as well. It was better than I thought, but. The pose down was like your typical pose down. The crowd were into it, though, and then Rude jumped him straight away. And there was one spot I like. I think you mentioned that he had him in a chin lock, and then Orndorff, he like stood up from that and did. It was like an electric chair drop move, which looks good. And Bockwinkel going over to help Heenan was a nice little touch.
After yeah, I thought that was cool. Shows that how friendly they are or whatnot.
Yeah, but yeah, so that it made sense for Heenan introducing him at the beginning. So, but yeah, I didn't like the ending either with the count out. I hate when they do the count out when it was on the apron for like most of the 10 seconds. It's yeah, but once it got going, it was pretty good, and it's to build up for a rematch. So.
I also gave this match 2.5. I liked it. I thought their chemistry was good. Two, you know, good guys. Weird. It's even at this stage, seeing Orndorff as a babyface is weird. You could tell though that you know, slowly but surely things are starting to affect him. His that right arm is starting to look a little smaller than everything else. And
oh yeah, I meant to mention that when he was on the pose down, it's very obvious.
Yeah, it's very obvious that that the nerve issues are already starting. Rude's just awesome. Rude just has that look. Rude's a star. And that's a guy that's going to have staying power, hopefully. The chair shot that he gives Orndorff, though, Bobby gives, is pretty awesome. He actually hits it pretty good, even though it's those usual shitty MSG cushion chairs. But the shot itself is pretty cool. And I just love Bockwinkel and Bobby. Is just, I don't know, I mark out seeing, you know, that harkening back to the old school AWA. So I thought that was awesome, too. But it's clear that Vince had a lot of plans for Humperdinck to maybe get more guys. You know, Orndorff was a guy hopefully that was sticking around. He obviously had another gentleman from a certain part of New Jersey, JR, and maybe going to get some more guys. So obviously Vince had a good feeling that, and the company had a feeling that Humpy could be somebody who
could kind of counter, you know, Jimmy and Bobby and Johnny V and those kind of guys. So it didn't surprise me, but I was curious to see where they were going to go with him down the line. Little do we realize what would happen, but we'll get there. Again, 2.5 stars. Oh, your match time was 10:41, and that's just the match. That doesn't include the the post down. The post down probably obviously probably over 20 minutes, but I don't know. It was a good match. Obviously, Rude's the man, and Orndorff we don't see a lot of. I mean, we will see him more, but he barely gets into 1988. But he's definitely reaching the end of the line. There's just nothing left there.
No, yeah, definitely not. He's about done. I do like the I did like the pose down though. I thought that was a good way to get the heat built up.
Yep.
And it's just funny that he goes like he was with Bobby, then he feuded with Bobby, then he was with Bobby, now he's feuded with Bobby again. this is kind of weird. But him and Rude is a natural like setup. Like that made a lot of sense to have them feud.
Yep.
And it's good first feud for Rude. I don't know if they knew Orndorff was leaving yet. So we'll see how decisively if they ever put Rude over him. But
right.
All right. So there you go. So why don't we head to our next match, and that is another guy who was a heel for a while and now turned face, and that is The Rock, Don Morocco, taking on Sika. Not a very appealing bout here on paper at all.
That's a touchy way to say it.
Gorilla says Morocco's the biggest he's ever seen him. Nick says he must be pushing the iron, and they talk about his routine.
We know what he's pushing.
Gorilla says Nick and Don hung out a lot in the islands, and Nick talks about our old friend Scott, Lord James Bleers. They lock up as Gorilla knows that Don had learned a lot of martial arts from Fuji, but now the divorce is complete, and says his team with Orton was a great one, but they couldn't make it work anymore. Sika chokes away Morocco in the corner and buries some tight chops. Morocco gets a sunset flip off a leapfrog in the corner and starts to work the leg. Nick says we're seeing two Polynesian wrestlers and explains the differences between the two as we get more leg work. Gorilla says strange things occur out in the islands. This is a classic match of commentary. Sika finally busts free and takes Don down and drops a headbutt on him before working the eyes. Nick explains the legends of the Islanders and their hard heads and hypothesizes why that's the case. Gorilla says it could be all the coconut juice. Like Nick is like trying to give legitimate reasons. I mean, it's asinine, obviously, but Nick is like trying to explain it, and the gorilla's like, "Oh, it's just the coconut juice they drink." Sika stomps and chokes away, and then headbutts Morocco to the floor. Gorilla and Nick talk about wrestling barefoot and how it's different here than in the islands. Sika blocks Morocco from coming back with headbutts as Gorilla and Nick now are discussing various types of muscular bodies. Sika keeps clubbing Morocco on the apron, but Don takes all of it and stands tall before landing a shoulder to the gut and coming inside, which I thought was a really cool segment. Morocco hammers away and lands a dropkick and punches some more. Morocco dodges a charge in the corner, ramps Sika's head to the buckle, which, of course, Nick says is foolish. Morocco stands on the top rope and jams his knee into the face and then rides Sika down hard to the mat for the win. A little bit better than I expected. A basic brawl with some energy, no slow spots. The battle on the apron is neat. I like the finish, too. And Morocco, surprisingly enough, even though he's put on like a ton of mass, is moving well. Like I think he's moving better now than he did as a heel, which is interesting. I actually enjoy him in this role as opposed to just like meandering through matches as a heel, dominating the offense. I've liked him better early on, selling and then making kind of hot comebacks. Like, I think he's been better in that role than he has been in a while. I mean, obviously he had you know some good, really good work as a heel back in the day, but over the last few years, that's faltered. So I think he's been kind of refreshing in this role overall, Scott. I want a star on this.
I want a star on this too. Your match time is 8:20, and I mean he's finalist number two for the for the RCD award because I mean we can't hide it. However, I will say that yes, for some reason I don't get it, but. For some reason, Morocco seems not only more motivated but more limber than he was when he was a heel. Like that was just fat bloated. This is other bloated, but I mean, he looks gross.
His veins
flying. Yeah,
he's about to explode.
I mean, the veins are busting out. I mean, it's rough. Yeah, it's I'm pleasantly surprised at how good he's become. I mean, as relatively speaking, of course. Sika, another guy. I mean, this really is a novelty show. I feel like this is one of those shows you'd watch now, like at a convention. You know, it's like these fucking guys coming back from between like 77 and 83, and 4 years later, they all seem so like ancient.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah, late, you'd think they'd be Persian guys, but this little bounce in late 87 is like, all right, like, what are we doing? You know, let's refresh things.
Well, again, obviously they loaded up the show in Pittsburgh, and we don't know who the hell was in Birmingham. So, I mean, it does. It seriously feels like an MSG reunion show. Very strange. But anyway, the match is fine. I mean, it's good for what it is. But I agree. I mean, it's very strange that of all the guys that have, like, loaded up medicinally on this roster, that Morocco, of all guys, actually legitimately benefited from it in the ring. But I mean, he looks ugly in physically. He does, but he obviously seems some type of cardio spike, Landy, to get us to where we are now. But, yeah, I mean, not a horrible match, but I mean, obviously we know what Morocco's using to help him, but JR's right. I mean, for some reason he looks better now than he's done the last, you know, 2 years as a heel.
Oh, yeah, I went a star as well. Yeah, his last couple of years is after the little Steamboat feud, I don't think after that he really did much.
Just those Hogan matches. So were those before or after Steamboat? I think it was after, right?
They were before, just before.
Okay.
Yeah, before.
Yeah, so yep. Then since Steamboat, yeah, that's not much.
Yeah, and then he's done the team with Orton, and we've seen their split up and had their match. I don't think he's really clicking as a face yet. I mean, he's facing Seeker here with Fuji there. Him and Fuji were together for years. They should have had some kind of interaction here, like even if he was just punching him off the apron or Fuji hitting him with the cane and then Morocco gets revenge at the end. But they didn't do anything like that. It's like you wouldn't have known he used to be his manager if you were just watching it with no commentary. But
right.
But yeah, the match was all right. I liked it, like a cool looking finisher Morocco did on the. It was like a pushed him down from the top with his knee driving into him. But how would you describe it? But it looked good. But yeah, it was better than I expected. And I was expecting a dud on this. So
yeah, I agree. It's better. I like that whole final exchange. I like the battle on the apron where he was jamming him with a shoulder, and then, like you said, Landy, I like the finish. It's pretty good. Morocco's been, it's turned him around a little bit. It's definitely been worth the experiment to turn a face. It was desperately needed, and maybe you get something out of him going forward. So we'll see.
Do you think they tried to come up with like a different finisher because he couldn't like spike pile drive fucking Zika?
Yeah, for sure.
Now he'd have been able to do it.
Yeah, no, I think so. Probably they probably just wanted to give an alternate thing too, just to mix it up a bit. But No, he's been a bit of a revelation here as the face. It's been interesting. Yeah. We'll see.
No, I agree.
See if it continues or if he peters out. All right, so let's head to our next match, and this is an interesting one. Is Macho Man Randy Savage, who is starting off his pretty much now in earnest as a face, breaks away from Honky Tonk Man for a show. Battles Killer Khan, I thought was a very interesting match in the middle of the show. It's kind of a weird placement. Like, when's the last time we've seen Savage in a spot like this on an MSG show? I feel like he's been pretty much at the top of the card whenever he's been on. Like, I don't remember the last time he was just in the middle of the show against kind of a, I don't know, Killer Khan's out of nobody, but against a guy that's like not part of a feud, just kind of a random match with a heel.
Well, you got to remember, if we look back, JR, a lot of our MSG shows throughout the middle of the year, he wasn't at. We didn't see, I mean, we saw him in what, September? But before that, we hadn't seen him at the Garden since February. So most of his matches we've seen him at the Garden were either against Hogan or Steamboat.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, just the little template we've seen of him at the Garden have been in high-profile stuff. This is a good spot for – I'll get it to my comments, but I like the spot he's in. Okay. I'll just say that for now, but I'll get more into that in my comments. But
all right. Born Masashi Ozawa on March 6, 1947 in Japan. Ozawa's Mongolian giant character was created by Carl Gotch, traveled to America in 1979 to wrestle. Following year in 1980, Killer Khan wrestled Andre the Giant in a tag match in Georgia. Later that year, hired by the WWF, feuded with Bob Backlund and Pedro Morales. Khan was then placed in a feud with Andre the Giant. During one match in May of 81, Khan knee-dropped off the top turnbuckle, resulting in Andre breaking his ankle when Khan accidentally landed on it. The truth was that Andre had actually broken his ankle getting out of bed. The incident was reported as real and is a storyline to help put Khan over. When Andre returned from his injury, him and Khan feuded into the next year, of course, with the infamous Mongolian stretcher match in Philadelphia in November of 81. Feud was named Observer Newsletter's Feud of the Year. 84, he went to Stampede, had a series of matches with Archie the Stomper Gouldie, and on January 20, 1984, won the Stampede North American Heavyweight title from Gouldie in a street fight. Returned here in 1987, managed by Mr. Fuji, takes on the Macho Man. Savage, solidifying his place on the face ledger, takes on a pure heel in Khan, who's has Fuji as always. Khan was a good heel to bring back, but we don't see much of him here with this initial push. Gorilla puts over Khan. Is dangerous, wonders where Fuji finds all these guys. Savage and Liz get a monster pop, look great, as Gorilla notes that Liz has a very conservative dress on. Khan jumps Savage to the bell and hammers away, but Savage flips things around and lays in a hard knee drop as Khan bails. Savage plays to the fans, and Nick is surprised that Macho is so affected by the crowd. Khan comes back, but Savage slugs him right back to the floor. Gorilla wonders if we'll see Khan's green slime, he says, as a mysterious one climbs back inside. Khan turns the tide. Fuji chokes Savage with his cane, yanking him to the floor and then pelting him in the back with it. Khan pulls Savage up and clubs him across the chest, and then Savage pulls himself back up to the apron, but Fuji lands another cane shot, and Khan stomps away. Khan and Fuji both take turns in and out of the ring, choking, stomping, and landing cane shots. Khan eventually misses a knee drop, but pops up and lands an axe to the back. Savage dodges a charge in the corner, buries a knee lift, and chokes away angrily. Savage continues to choke Khan in the corner and slides outside and stalks Fuji with a chair, which Nick calls a bad move. Khan clobbers Savage from behind, pitches him back inside, and goes to work on the back. Khan hoists Savage to a hanging backbreaker and talks shit to Liz during it. Savage eventually flips free and stomps Khan, and then drills him with an axe off the top. Savage unloads and grabs near falls, but Khan lands a thrust to cut him off. He stalks Savage and tries to spew the mist, but Savage blocks it with his hands to a big pop and then rubs it in Khan's face. Savage slams Khan hard and goes to the top and hits a big elbow for the win and a mega pop. Savage beats the shit out of Fuji after the match. Fun match, a red-hot finish with some good brawling. Khan's pretty limited, so never really hit that next gear, but I thought it was fun for what it was. The crowd is in love with Savage right now, just in love with him. Massively over as a face, Scott. I went 2.5 on this. What do you think of Savage blocking the mist with his hands? I feel like you don't ever really see that.
It was very weird. By the way, I gave it 2.5. Your match time, 10:14. So a good little match. I thought it was hilarious. You know why? Because as serious, even as a babyface, as serious and as intense as Savage is, it's not often you get like a cute little comedy spot that fits the match.
Right.
And the fact that he like did the like block the mist and showed it off is very unsavage like. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. So different for him because he's so intense even as a babyface. He's so intense. So to be a little different and actually, you know, block the mist, which is pretty much, you know, killing Khan's finisher because that's pretty much the start of it. It was great. I thought it was awesome. Fun match. Again, yeah, Khan really can't do much. His moveset's not conducive totally to Savage, but still Savage took a good beating, and I love it. I love this spot. This is actually an earned spot for Savage. He doesn't have to do anything high profile. Simple, you know, 10 minute match in the middle of a card just to kind of get over and make things easy. You don't have to go too bonkers, and good spot for Savage. I think he earned the right to have kind of a, I don't say easy match, but where he didn't have to totally go crazy like if he fought Hogan or Steamboat or something like that or Honky. He kind of could kind of coast a little bit and make things easy for himself, yet still put on a great match at the same time. I know Khan was, I mean, and he said, I mean, the stuff you mentioned that was in the bio, I mean, I've been watching some stuff from him in Mid-South. Great heel in other territories. So it's kind of a coup to have him here, but obviously he was here simply to, you know, put other guys over. I've watched a lot of the stuff, and the Andre stuff is awesome. So again, it was good to have him here. But I like the spot for Savage. It's not—I don't think it's an insult or a demotion or anything. I think it's, you know, there's other stuff in the card that needs to be highlighted. And you know, Hogan got—I mean, think about it. Even Hogan had throwaway title matches on MSG house shows that we didn't give a shit about. You know, so all the good babyfaces deserve at least one match.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's just random. Like he's been so.
No, it is random. I agree with you.
He's been so enthralled, you know, in this feud with Honky, and then all of a sudden, nope, he's fighting Killer Khan. It was felt kind of odd, you know.
No, it's definitely odd. I agree 100%. I'm surprised yet well deserved that he gets like a simple, you know, middle match a Landy. But a good win for Savage nonetheless, you know. And I thought the miss spot was cool.
Yeah, I did too. The ending was great and Khan's like facials when he blocks it is shocked that could possibly happen because normally, once he hits the mist, that's it. He wins the match. He's got. So I liked that bit. But yeah, it was a good little match. I said 2.5 stars as well. I just thought maybe, because like this is what, about 2 weeks after the Saturday night main event with Elizabeth getting shoved to, maybe Liz should have sat out this one to build more heat for when they do come back to Honky Tonk Man. I don't know what you think about that. Maybe she's come back straight, you know, straight away from it as if she's fine. Like, she wasn't really selling anything. I mean,
yeah,
it's funny you say that. Oh, sorry, Jared, go ahead.
No, I agree. I mean, the only thing I think of is that, like, she just kind of got, like, she wasn't really beaten up or anything. I mean, she was just kind of shoved to the mat. So I don't, I guess maybe she could have, like, sold her ankle a little bit or something, but I'm kind of okay with it, only because I don't think she really took a shot to the point that would have, like, caused her injury, you know?
Well, it's funny you say that because you know, her dress is very conservative for her, and Gorilla actually says, oh, she's wearing something very kind of conservative and safe tonight because maybe she's hiding the bruises, which I thought was kind of strange.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what Bockwinkel was saying, but he goes, well, I don't know. It's not like he backhanded her. It's like, what the fuck was that? It's like it's like so strange.
It's all right to throw a woman to the ground, Gorilla, as long as you don't backhand her.
As long as you don't backhand him. So I think that's maybe, Landy, that's kind of what they were doing. They were, you know, she wasn't wearing like a, you know, a short skirt where she usually shows her neckline and her arms and stuff. And she was wearing something kind of baggy, like she wore like a few years later in L.A. or WrestleMania 7. It's a very weird baggy outfit. Yeah. But no, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. Savage comes out alone. I think that would have been neat. But yeah, I caught that when he's like, yeah, he didn't backhand her, though. What? Looks so bizarre. All right. Well, why don't we take a break? Because we gotta let the New York Union crew take 50 minutes to put the fucking gauge up. JR, up and down, not bad, right? I mean, mildly entertaining. It was a, you know, stinker here and there, but I mean, mildly entertaining, I guess, right?
It depends on mild, you want to say, yeah. But it's pretty mild.
Very mild. Tepid.
Yeah.
What do you think so far, Landy?
Yeah, I agree. It's got certain moments, but like I said, there's some stinkers been on the way, but
we haven't got that. Yeah, go ahead, Sylvia. I'm sorry.
I'll just say it's all interesting stuff. Nothing too boring, like you can't watch it. So
you haven't had that anchor match yet, Scott. You know, it's like we see that a lot of times. Sometimes we'll get that first half anchor match, and you say, all right, even if we don't get much else, you get this. We haven't had that yet, so we'll see if we get that in the back end. He's only got a few more shots at it.
And right.
Two of the matches don't look promising.
No. I mean, we do get Savage, but again, it's not like a Savage. It's not like Savage.
Right. You're not getting a hidden gem like him and a Tito or something. You know, like that, you're guaranteed 3.5-4 stars.
Exactly.
You get him at Khan just kind of going through a brawl. Yeah, it'll be interesting. So, yeah, why don't we take that break? You come back, we'll hit the pop culture corner, and of course, we'll wrap up the show. So, stay there.
Because
let me elbows go loose, Lou. Let me elbows go loose. There is no further use, Lou. So let me elbows go loose. All together now, tie me kangaroo down. Sport, tie me kangaroo down. Tie me kangaroo down. Sport, tie me kangaroo down. And mind me platypus duck, Bill.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, to Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Get ready to bow to the master. Yeah, boy. Yo, you can try and hold me down if you want to. All the garbage I've been through, think I'm scared of you? I'll kill you. Don't got to care in the world of hell with the world. Man like me got...
Though I keep searching for an answer, I never seem to find what I'm looking for. Lord, I pray you give me strength to carry on, 'cause I know what it means to walk along the lonely street.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the October 16th, 1987 Madison Square Garden House Show. Richard Land in the third seat with us here tonight, having a great time, even though it's a shaky show. And, you know, Scott, after a couple weeks, 3 weeks off, right? Was it three full weeks? You know, I was kind of, you know, I had a long day at work, came home, helped get the kids to bed, had some dinner, and said, here we go again. And headed down to the basement, getting back on the saddle for the Place to Be podcast, and also going again on their own is Whitesnake with the number one song in the nation this week, Here I Go Again. You can hear that playing underneath us right now. And that does bring us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner. Take it away.
Correct. And it's a great song to listen to when you're traveling from New Jersey to Delaware. Yes, your number one song is Whitesnake's Here I Go Again from their big platinum-selling album of that year. And number two, Lost in Emotion by Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam. Lost in Emotion. Number three, Carrie by Europe. Another great song. A lot of good power ballads this week. Number four, Still There, I Heard a Rumor by Bananarama from that great Fat Boys movie, Disorderlies. And number five, You Got the Look by Prince.
We're not going to get sidetracked again this week.
No, we're not getting sidetracked.
By Transformers.
You Got the Look by Prince with Sheena Easton singing as well, and coming up with that great term, Hector slamming, or in the Jets' case, Johnny Hector slamming. Mm-hmm. More about the Jets later.
Hector Noesi.
There you go. Number six, Didn't We Almost Have It All by Whitney, former number one. Number seven, Who Will You Run To by Heart. Number eight, the new album's out. So in number eight is Michael with Bad. You know I'm bad. As bad as out now, of course.
Climb pretty quickly.
Yes, oh, I'm sure it will. I'm sure we'll have it soon. Number nine, Paper and Fire by John Mellencamp. And at number 10,
Casanova by Levert.
And Shirley.
And Trees. Levert. Well, by this point, Penny Marshall looked like somebody named
Levert. Is Paper and Fire better than Magnet and Steel?
Well, if there was a fight between John Mellencamp and Walter Egan, I'm pretty sure Walter Egan would have no fucking chance.
Who are you to doubt Walter Egan?
Yeah, right. Anyway, there's your top 10 on the Billboard charts. There'll be a fresh Billboard chart. It's very rare that we have a Friday show. So usually we would have done maybe the 17th, which is the next day, which is a fresh one. But we always go back one. So this was the last day of that poll before the fresh one would come out the next week. So there you go.
By the way,
number
Egan,
one song in the country.
Egan was good at game shows. Four-time champion of the game show Catchphrase in 1985. Tarred on a contestant on the television show Scrabble in 1986. Egan identifies himself as a singer-songwriter. Chuck Woolery asked him to sing a bit from one of his songs, and he sang the main hook from Magnet and Steel.
Magnet and Steel, yep. And then John Mellencamp ran onto Hollywood Squares and pushed him off the set. No. okay. There's your top 10 on the Billboard charts. Guess what, JR? Very weird. A rare week, no movies came out. Quiet in the cinemas. We know that The Princess Bride is already in theaters.
Would anybody like a peanut?
Little peanut. So, but no movies came out on this Friday. Baseball, it is an off day, but tomorrow, Saturday the 17th of October, would be game one of the 1987 World Series between your National League champion St. Louis Cardinals and your American League champion Minnesota Twins. And the game will be at the Homer Dome in Minneapolis, so no baseball. But that previous Sunday, we took the field. All right. So we're going back to the previous weekend. So this is Sunday, October 11th, week 5 of the 1987 NFL season. We are still on strike.
Oh, boy.
So we still have scabs, JR, so you'll be picking out of your ass for most of these.
Speaking of scabs, Kelly, how's he doing?
Did he get his picks Kelly in? As well. Okay. Yeah, Kelly did get his picks in, so we do have your picks. All
so
right,
here's the total, by the way, just to give the scores. Right. We've had two of these so far. Kelly has 15, I have 19, and Peter Winston had 8. So there you go.
Okay.
It was 1 week.
There we go. All right, so let us begin with week 5 of the 1987 NFL season, and it is all scabs. Let's begin at Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, otherwise known as the Mistake by the Lake. Where the Browns host the Houston Oilers.
I'll go with the Browns.
Okay. Kelly took the Oilers, and the Oilers win 15-10.
Okay.
I'm not even going to tell you who passed or rushed or received because I don't know any of these fucking guys. Okay. So, all right. Next, let's go to the Big Sombrero in Tampa, the Buccaneers hosting the San Diego Chargers.
Who did Kelly take?
Kay.
Hmm?
Come on. Kelly's always supposed to go second when he's not here. You know that.
No, why wouldn't we both go? Why don't we alternate?
Fair enough.
Like we would. Why should I have to always not know?
No, that is true. He took the Chargers.
Okay. I will as well.
Okay. And you both won. There you go.
All right.
See? Chargers win 17-13 in Tampa. All right, next, let's go to Soldier Field in Chicago. The Bears host the Vikings.
I will take the Bears.
So did Kelly, and the Bears did win 27-7. Let's go to Foxborough for a team always with scabs, the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
They host the Buffalo Bills. Kelly took the Pats.
I'll take the Pats, too.
They win 14-7. Let's go to Miami, the Orange Bowl, where the Dolphins host the Kansas City Chiefs.
Chiefs only at home, so I'll go Miami.
And Kelly took the Dolphins as well, and they won big, 42-0.
God, imagine getting 42 laid on you by scrubs.
I know. It's not even Dan Marino that drops 42 in Yanni.
Jesus.
Some guy named Mackey was quarterbacking Miami. Oh, grief. Let's go to Lambeau Field, the frozen tundra, which is probably not frozen for early October. The Packers host the Detroit Lions. Kelly took the Packers.
Packers at home. Yeah, all right. I'll take them.
In overtime, Lions win
1960. I'm just taking it.
We go to the hole in the roof where God could watch his favorite team play, Texas Stadium. And Irving, the Cowboys, host the Philadelphia Eagles.
God can watch his biggest mistake. I'll go with the Cowboys.
Ah, you wish. Kelly took the Eagles, and guess what? You got a point, so yes. Shut up. Cowboys win 41-22.
Boy, Tom.
The Eagles are scabs every day of their lives. Who cares if they win anything? Let's go to St. Louis. Busch Stadium. The Cardinals host the New Orleans Saints. Kelly took the Saints.
I'll take the Cardinals.
And Cardinals win 24-19. Yes. John Forcade with 170. I just said his name because I think he eventually became a regular player. So, All right, let's go to the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. The J-E-T-S Jets. Jets taking on the Colts.
We talked a little bit about Forcade 1987, baby. I will take my Jets.
All right. Kelly took the Colts. And in the hottest, most exciting game of the season, JR, the Colts win 6-0. Dreadful. I don't even know who the hell this guy is for the Jets. Some guy named Nori is the quarterback for the Jets. Only you could lose a game 6-0 with a bunch of fucking scabs. All right, let's go to the Kingdom in Seattle. The Seahawks host the Cincinnati Bengals.
Who did Kelly take?
Kelly took the Seahawks.
I will as well.
And they lose 17-10 to the Bengals.
Fuck the Bengals.
Let's go to, and I feel bad, I'm sorry, Chad, the beautiful, elaborate, exquisite Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta, where
Filled
the Falcons host yes, where the Falcons host the 49ers. Kelly took the Niners.
Yeah, me too.
Niners win 25-17. Hmm. All right, let's go out to Anaheim, where the Rams host the Steelers. Rams.
Yeah, I'll take the Rams too.
Rams win 31-21. Let's go to Giant Stadium in the Meadowlands, where the G-Men host the Washington Redskins.
I will take the G-Men.
Kelly took the Skins, and the Skins won huge, 38-12 over the Giants. And on Monday night, from Mile High Stadium in Denver, the Broncos host the Los Angeles Raiders. Kelly took the Broncos.
Yeah, all right, I'll go Denver.
Okay. Broncos win 30-14.
All right, so Kelly wins his first week, but only chips away by one. He wins at 10-9. So overall, we have, 28-25 me. Yeah.
Okay. And we got a lot more. We're going to have more weeks because they pushed everything. So we're actually going to have more. Yeah. Kelly have some more opportunities to catch up. So, all right, there we go. There's football. The NHL season got started a couple of weeks earlier. I believe it's the 87. So the defending champions were Mr. Gretzky and his Oilers. Five games that night. Any of our teams playing, JR? Yes, our Whalers, the Whale, on that evening, lost at Washington 6-2. Any of our other teams? Mr. Poirier's Canadians lost 4-3 to the Devils. Kelly's Flames lose at home 5-2 to the defending champion, Edmonton Oilers. So, all right. And finally, to wrap this up, Landy, are you there, sir? I could not leave you out, my friend.
I'm still here, yes.
All right. Well, it is time for me to do my perfect Lord Alfred Hayes voice and to give you what went on in 1987 in English football, sir. So, personal consideration for this English football paid for by the following. Levi's jeans. In the first division of the football season, Liverpool won the league title. Are you a Liverpool fan? You're not, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Manchester United.
You're watching Man U. Second was Man U, rejuvenated under Mr. Alex Ferguson, right? Isn't he like the Hall of Fame coach of all
teams? Alec Berg.
Turned them around.
Yep, he had bought some impressive new players, including Brian McClair and Steve Bruce. So, but they finished second. Liverpool won the first division. Millwall won the second division. Runner-up was Aston Villa. Sunderland won the third division. Brighton and Hove Albion were the runners-up. Wolves won the fourth division. And in one of the biggest upsets, apparently, in the 20th century, Mr. Land, Wimbledon won the FA Cup by stunning Liverpool 1-0 in the final.
Wow.
There you go.
It must have been an upset beating Liverpool, yeah.
Yeah. And in the League Cup final, Ray Hartford's Luton Town achieved a shocking 3-2 win over Arsenal in the League Cup final. So there you go. So there is what happened in football in 1987-88. Haven't heard much about
you for that.
No problem. You're welcome. Haven't heard much from Liverpool, huh? Are they, still around?
Are they still a team?
Yeah, they're still not doing too bad. They haven't won the league since like the early 90s, though. So they get a lot of stick for that.
Yeah, Man U is like the Yankees of English soccer.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. So, all right. Well, there you go. And there, JR, is your pop culture corner. I think by now the cage might be up. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They already put six coffee breaks. So why don't we go backstage for some interviews?
We do. The cage is being assembled for our next match. Craig DeGeorge is with Nikolai Volkov talking about his match tonight. Nikolai says he hopes Billy Jack Haynes is in the best shape of his career, and he came to America to fight and prove Russia is number one. DeGeorge is then with Billy Jack Haynes, who puts over New York City and MSG and says he stands by all the USA, wants to shut down that Russian big mouth because America is number one. He was born in the streets with no money, and USA got him to where he is today. Craig then with Billy Graham, the superstar, who talks about what happened last time they battled in MSG, says that tonight Slick, Gorilla Monsoon, and nobody else will get in the ring. It'll be man-on-man, one-on-one, brother. DeGeorge is in with Butch Reed, who talks about what it means to be inside the cage and says he'll go to work anyway. He wants to be in there. Only one man will leave standing. It will be him. He doesn't care for cage matches, but knows he can take care of himself. And that does bring us to our next match, and that is the superstar, Billy Graham, taking on the natural Butch Reed in the big rematch from 2 months ago. Gorilla and Nick put over the cage. Nick says one has to be idiotic to get inside a steel cage. This should be a pretty hot rematch after the surprisingly feisty affair back in August. Nick says Graham's really dumb. Reed is soundly booed as he heads to the ring alone without Slick, but Graham turns the booing into cheers as he power walks out. As Graham climbs into the cage, Reed attacks him and spikes him at the door and starts to stomp away. Reed punishes Graham, slugging away and choking Superstar with his headband. Gorilla reminds us that doctors said Graham would never walk again, but here he is. Reed keeps on the pressure and hangs Graham from the cage with his headband as Nick calls Gorilla Mr. Morella. Which was weird. Reed pummels Graham as he hangs, but Reed eventually turns into a boot, and Graham breaks free, unloads a flurry of strikes, and then drops Reed with a clothesline. Graham starts to climb out, but Reed catches him, pulls him back inside, and clubs on the bad leg. Both men collide with a double shoulder block, and Reed is up first and goes to the door, but Graham yanks him back inside. Graham stomps away and hooks a sleeper, but Reed goes after the leg to bust that up. Reed keeps punishing the leg and goes to escape, but Graham pulls him back in and crotches him on the top rope. Reed shakes that off and goes to the leg again and tries to escape, but Graham grabs his leg and then follows up. The trade blows on top of the cage, and Graham elbows Reed down and then follows, which Gorilla and Nick criticize. Graham hooks a bear hug, but Reed powers out quickly and then targets the back. Reed scales the cage, but Graham makes a save again, and then Reed pulls out brass knucks, but Graham ducks the punch, and Atomic drops Reed to the cage, grabs the knucks, decks Reed, and escapes out the door for the win. Pretty fun. I think it was a slight step ahead of their previous battle. Reed wasn't as good on offense here, and he couldn't mask the deficiencies as well. But this one felt bigger. It felt like there were more stakes around it. I thought the finish was good, as Graham really leveled Reed. And it's been a fun feud. Gave Graham one last moment in the sun. And Reed, though, needs something to help him recover if he's going to hang around and be anything. Like, this is, you know, loses to Graham pretty cleanly here, and he needs something to bounce back. But I went 2 stars on this. It was fun. Fun enough to watch. And it's not going to carry a show, but it was good for the crowd. They were into Graham, and I enjoyed it, Scott.
I gave it... what did I give it? I gave it 2 stars. Your match time is 10:59. I actually enjoyed it. I didn't think I would, but I kind of did. I have to be honest, though. I thought this match would be last for a couple of reasons. Number one, because trying to do a cage in the middle is kind of a pain in the ass. Then you got to put it down. And I don't know. I thought it would be cool to give Superstar Billy Graham this like one last moment in the sunshine, because it's evident as you're watching this match, he can't wrestle. he's a cripple in essence. So I was surprised that this match was not last, believe it or not. I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt on one thing. I know as maybe you're watching it, JR and Landy, that maybe it seemed like it was going slow, but I really do think they were trying to catch the essence of a legit cage match and really kind of building the drama and building it. I mean, they could only go so fast. I mean, Butch Reed could only do so much. I mean, we saw an awesome match with him and Tito, but obviously Billy Graham's not Tito. So I think they did the best they could with what they had. I might be like overly optimistic here, but I wasn't going to give it more than 2 stars, but I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt in building the drama, building the psychology, the storytelling for being in the cage. Because let me tell you, when you're in a cage match at the Garden, you should be taking this seriously. It doesn't happen every day. And I think they were doing their best to really build it. and really kind of, you know, build the energy, because you, this wasn't a giveaway that anybody was going to win here, you know? So I think that they were doing their best to really kind of, you know, think, oh, maybe Butch Reed may actually win this match. He's the younger guy, you know, maybe he's the guy that's being, that's going to get the eventual push, not this, you know, old guy. And so not quite sure where they're going to go with it. I mean, Billy Graham could have snapped his hip the way he flopped out of the door, but I thought it was fine. I thought the storytelling was fine. I thought trying to build the drama to the end was good. I thought the throw of Butch Reed into the cage and then the brass knuck shot was good. I'll give them that. I'll give them that they did their best to try to really tell as best a story as they could with what limited resources they had, Landy. I think I'm being politically correct in saying that. So I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it told a good story, and it was a good moment for Billy Graham, because obviously this probably is going to be it for him, because as you could see as this match was going, the guy could barely move. So that's why I thought maybe they'd have put this match last. But, I mean, it doesn't hurt that it's here, but I thought for you know, purposes of not having to undo the cage and then wait for more matches, they would have done this match last. But I was good. I was fine with that. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said. I thought it should have gone last as well, which I'll probably explain later after the last match why I thought. But I said 2 stars as well. Once it got going, it was better than I expected. Like I said, Graham had obvious limitations, but the Reed did well to get him through the match. One thing I want to get your opinion were, was this feud, this rematch, worthy of a cage match? Like, especially with Slick not been there. Like, normally that'd be to keep the manager out, but Slick wasn't even there. What do you think? Did they really need to have a cage match to blow off the feud?
I think so, because I don't know if they could get through another straight match. The two of them. I think they needed some kind of gimmick to hide them. And I think it just makes it seem kind of high stakes for Graham. I don't know. I get it. I get what they're trying to do. You're right, though. Like, Slick not being there does make it a little bit more, confusing, but not as needed. But I do think that it helped the deficiencies a bit. Like, it was a miracle they got through that last match with no gimmick around it. So that'd be my guess.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, and I think you said, like, they've given, this is Graham's last MSG match, and after the, like, all his history then, it was like his last hurrah, as they knew he's, I'm pretty sure they knew he was done by that. I mean, he doesn't even make it to Survivor Series, so they sub him out, if you remember, a few weeks before. So,
Yeah,
that's about all I've got. And Reed was winning most of their, like, other regular house show match. I think this was their only cage match. I might be wrong, but Reed was winning most of their other matches, so.
Which is good. He needed it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he needed to stay strong over Graham, even if they had some plans for maybe Graham to stick around. But I don't blame them for Graham going over here. And having him go over in the cage is easier than having him pin Reed anyway. So they actually did it pretty shrewdly, maybe that too, for having the cage, where they could have Graham sneak out the door and actually have to pin Reed. So you still keep Reed strong. He hasn't really jobbed to Graham on a major way in any of this. So I think it was well done. I didn't mind the feud. I liked both matches. I liked them because they're in MSG. It's kind of Graham's old stomping ground. And the crowd loved them there, and Reed was good bouncing around for him. So I thought it was a pretty well done mini series between these two guys here in MSG.
Yeah, I agree. But I definitely think that they could have put this last. But like I said, Landy probably has more. We'll have more when he gets his comments. But I just think that it would have been fine to have to kind of let this end, and it would have been pretty cool. But. Well, since it took that long to put the cage up, how long will it take to put the cage down?
Not as long, thankfully. Yeah, we do go backstage where Craig DeGeorge is with the Islanders to talk about their best-of-three war with Strikeforce tonight. They will win and go on to capture the tag team titles, they say. DeGeorge is in with Strikeforce, and they are fired up for tonight's battle. They say this is an important match for both teams and the most important match to date for the force that strikes. Billy Jack Haynes and Nikolai Volkov is up next. Before we get to that last match, very messy on paper here. Volkov sings the anthem. Gorilla asks Nick why he isn't standing. He says, because he says Heenan usually would be, and Nick says he's protesting, so he's going to sit. Not the case. Haynes shows up and attacks Nikolai while he sings and knocks him to the floor with a dropkick. Nikolai comes over, but Billy Jack drops him with punches and bails again as Gorilla Nick argue over which anthems to respect. Billy Jack follows out eventually. Nikolai baits him in and then runs him into the post. Back inside, Nikolai stomps away and then rolls Billy Jack up as Nick is gushing over Russian's amateur training. Nikolai unloads right hands, but Billy Jack fires right back away at him and lands boots to the gut. Haynes lands an elbow drop for two as Nick says he's only semi-retired. He was inspired enough he could rise to the occasion. Haynes cuts Nikolai down with a hard clothesline and tries to the full Nelson, but Nikolai gets to the ropes. Billy Jack punches away, but Nikolai meets him with boots on a charge and rolls him up and uses the ropes for leverage, but the ref sees it and stops counting as Nikolai's arguing. Billy Jack sneaks up and rolls him up for the win. Fine, whatever, not much going on. Billy Jack gets a win. Nikolai spiraling, about as basic as it gets. I don't know. I'm back and forth waffling on this one. I'm going to go dud. I think that's it is what it is, Landy.
Yeah. I thought dud as well. Nothing special at all. I don't think he even looked good. Volkov, like, he misses. Like, he's not had Iron Sheik as his partner for a while. He misses the tag team partner. I think he's better in the tag team match, which we will see. But yeah, nothing to write home about.
No, just killing time before the main event.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to be generous like you earlier, JR, and I gave it a half star, but I don't know what either of us were thinking. I'm giving that a dud. Billy Jack is just not good. He obviously clearly gets frustrated with his role. I mean, he lasts for a decent amount of 88, not too much, but a decent amount. And Nikolai,
this is his last MSG as well. So
yeah, this is last MSG. Does he? Yeah. I mean, he wrestled through the summer, I think.
I think he's at almost the end of 88.
Yeah.
No. He's gone before WrestleMania.
Oh, really? I thought he was there through a lot of 88 for some reason. I guess not.
I thought that too. Yeah. Weird.
No, you're right. Yeah.
I thought he wrestled into the summer. Anyway. I guess he would have been in the Battle Royal if he was, but anyway.
Actually, he's up for a bunch. Looks like his last match is February 5th. Is it the night of the main event? Was his last show in Indianapolis? No, I lied. I'm sorry. He was supposed to be. It was a singles match. God, he got subbed a lot in his last run here. Billy Jack was supposed to be in the match. Right here. January 16th in Chicago. He's in a six-man.
There you go. Oh, I thought he was around longer, too.
Yeah, I thought he was around for a lot of 88. So, all right. Well, we're not going to see Billy Jack anymore.
Oh,
right?
On,
I don't
Billy
think
jerk.
So, anyway. He's not is he in the Rumble?
So, all right. Let's get to our main event.
Is he in the Royal Rumble, or are we done with him?
He's not on each Survivor Series or Rumble, I don't think.
Yeah, all right, so we might be done with him, Scott, then. I don't know. So he ends up, let's see what goes on here. They, of course, yeah, they kind of have a mini feud with Demolition where he was him and Patera and then
Brady Boone.
So there, he was involved in that and ended up leaving. There's some controversy behind it. He says he quit after refusing the job in Portland. Another account said he was actually wrestled the match and then fired after. So that's that. He went back to Oregon in 88, wrestled some independents, actually started his own promotion, the Oregon Wrestling Federation. In early 90s, he did several shows for Herb Abrams, UWF, built around a strongman feud with him and Patera, went to WCW's Black Blood, fired due to a pay dispute in July of 91, suffered a knee injury, rehabbed for a bit, and then went back to Portland. He was there until 96. And of course, he's had some issues with the WWE since being part of like the concussion, poor treatment by the WWE stuff. Actually had an aneurysm, liver and kidney issues in 2013, but still alive. So Billy Jack Haynes, 64.
Nope, not at the Rumble. Weird. Okay. All right. Let's go to our final match, main event.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I'm guessing Graham is probably the listed main event, right, in this one. But this one's going to be pretty close. And that is the continuation of the big feud between the Strike Force and the Islanders. Big time final match here with the 2 out of 3 stips. Not a ton of time left on the show, though. Islanders head out to booze as Nick puts them over as a team and calls Strike Force the Pollyanna team. Strike Force jogs out to girls in cars and cheers, and they clear the ring as they enter. Gorilla is shocked that Bobby Heenan is not there with all the ramifications on the line. Haku and Tito open things up and trade flurries of punches. That Tito eventually wins. Haku gets double-teamed in the corner, tags Martel, and is all over Haku, shooting him all around the ring and tagging Tito, cranks a headlock. Tito releases and gets a cross-body block for two as Nick says Strike Force has shot their biggest shot already and can't win now. Martel tags in and drops Haku with a shoulder block and then a hard elbow. Haku shakes that off and lays in a blow and then tags Tama, who comes in and drops Martel with a back elbow and chokes away. The ref gets tied up with Tito as the Islanders false tag and swap places. They start to double team and quick tag, going for pin covers. Martel drops Tama with a shoulder block, but Tama recovers and maintains control in the corner. Tama eats a boot on a charge, and Martel scurries over and tags Tito, who comes in hot. He's all over Tama. Tito twists into the figure four, but Haku makes a save. Martel fends Haku off and gets tied up with the ref, and he headbutts Tito to the floor. Haku stomps away out there until Martel makes another save, and back inside, Haku and Tama work over Tito's leg, taking turns abusing it. Things break down with all four brawling as the ref is again with Martel. The Islanders drop a double headbutt and take the first fall. Martel comes in to check on Tito to get him a breather, but the Islanders want to keep going, and the match resets as Tama rolls up Tito, but the ref is tied up with Haku, and Martel comes in and flips him over, and Strikeforce gets a quick win in the second fall, maybe the quickest one ever. Tito's still badly hurting, and Nick says the quick fall hurts Strikeforce because Tito never had a chance to tag and rest. And after the rest period, the Islanders go right at Tito again, Haku hammering away, fends off a comeback, and tags Tama, who works the leg. The Islanders false tag again, but Haku misses an elbow drop, and Tito can't make the tag. Tama comes in and Tito dodges a double headbutt, and now he makes the tag, who cleans house to a massive pop, gets a close near fall and a cross body off the middle rope. Haku hooks Martel from the apron, but Rick dodges a Tama knee lift, and the Islanders collide outside. Martel rolls up Tama and gets the win to a massive pop. Good as usual, but I thought the stip hurt it. The match felt rushed, and the falls were all jammed together and not really necessary. There was no organic flow to it. I think the match finish would have been even hotter with without the stops and starts and stops and starts. But the chemistry is there. They're really good together. Strikeforce has gelled nicely. The Islanders are always welcome. And this should do it, I think, for the feud. Strikeforce has a potential claim to go chase the champions now with the win there. I went just 3 stars on this, which is a little disappointing to me. I expect more from these guys, but I think it was more the stiff hamstring in them, Landy.
Yeah, definitely. And because the last two falls were super rushed, which from earlier, because it took so damn long taking the cage down. I mean, if this match was in that spot, then they wouldn't. They'd have had a bit more time, and
right, yeah, good point.
I think that hurt this match because they went right. The show went right off the air as the match ended, so they were obviously way out of time. As normally a gorilla or whatever say, like close the show and stuff. So, but yeah, it was a good match though. I thought the match last month at MSG was better.
Yeah,
but it's because of how rushed this was, but. I give it 3 stars though, but yeah, it's definitely the blow off for their feud because it's been how many months is it? It was when Zenk was still there. It started, right?
Yeah, it started like May, I think. Yeah,
yeah, it's been like 5-6 months all every month, like the singles and then the two tags. So yeah, they're definitely ready for the tag title shot. I think now the Strikeforce.
Yeah, I think it was, June is when the Can-Ams fought the Shadows. Isn't that when the Islanders attacked them or whatever and then issued the challenge?
Yeah.
Yeah, because then in July, Martel fought Tama. So since June, it's been going. Yeah, so quite a while. I agree with you, too. If they didn't waste the time in the cage, you're right. They could have went ahead and instead had that here. Also, or they could have got rid of the stupid Billy Jack match and just went from Graham into this and you know, added a little bit of time. But that... The falls just, yeah, the start, stop. It's all of it just killed the flow. Like, these guys are so great at building an organic hot tag and pop sequence. And, you know, Martel is so good at taking that hot tag that all of this felt so jammed together. And I thought that's what really ruined a lot of this match. I'm with you, Landy, 100%.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Scott, what was the time? It didn't feel very long for all three falls.
Your final time was 10:27. The first fall was 7:11, and then the next fall was 8:07. So the next fall was literally less than a minute, and then the third fall went another minute and a half, or minute 20. Yeah. So the last two falls were barely 2 minutes.
A 2 out of 3 falls match should be, especially with these guys, like at least 15 minutes to do everything properly. But it's
what
like
I would,
the silly cage.
Yeah, exactly. What I would have done was. I think to change this matchup, I would have ditched the fucking terrible Billy Jack. I probably would have ditched that Putski disaster too. And had this match, maybe what I would have done was I would have moved Savage to earlier in the show, maybe like the third match. Had this in the middle, gone to break, did something else, and then had the cage last. Unless maybe having Savage before the cage, which I don't know if you want to gas the crowd before the main, before the cage match. It just depends on your point of view. But I would have ditched a couple of these trash bag matches and given this match like 20 minutes and then let them really tell the story. And we didn't get that. So, but I mean, the match wasn't awful. I gave it 3 stars as well.
No, it was good. It's disappointing because you expect more from these guys. I'm curious for Kelly to weigh in too. Because I know he loves this feud. And I'm curious what he thinks of this one to cap it off. You know, it's just you wanted more from what it was. Especially, I think, too, it's probably unfair in a way, but the fact that the rest of the show kind of stunk. like you put a lot of extra pressure on it, too, like to really deliver. And when it doesn't, it's like, you know, like if this would have been like maybe a 4-star match that they were capable of having, now you're talking of like, all right, it's not that bad of a show because we wrapped up with this great tag match. But them just being merely good didn't help carry what's been kind of a disappointing show.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. But I mean, obviously, Strike Force is on the radar for the Hart Foundation, so that's pretty evident after this. So I think them just winning was fine, but I would have ditched a couple of these trash matches and given them another, you know, 10 minutes and let them really go all out, even if it wasn't last. They could have gone all out and really put on a stellar match. Instead, they just put on good. But I mean, if this match was 10-27 and it was one fall, it probably would have been awesome. But yeah, the gimmick of having to have two more falls kind of murdered the flow. Mm-hmm. And by the way, before this, and then we're done. We're out. And of course, Finkel earlier announced the matches for our next show as well. So, all right, that's it. So let's now dive in and see who wins. I don't know if anybody wins any awards for this one.
well, it's funny too because I know we're kind of dumping on it, but I think this is because the shows lately have been pretty good. Like this is still better than a lot of the junk we watched from like parts of '85 and '86. I just feel like they've actually been surprisingly better than. I am been pleasantly surprised by 1987, these MSGs. I thought it was going to be a down year. But we've seen some pretty solid ones as of late. You know, we had kind of a dog in May. I think that was the last bad one we've had, where me, you, and D'Amato didn't give it very good grades at all. And then January was shaky, too. That was with Tim. But other than that, it's been a pretty solid year. So this has felt like a step down from that as well. So, all right, let's start here with Match of the Night. I think, by default, it's Island of Strike Force to me. I don't know if either of you guys disagree.
Nah, it's got to be it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Type that in here. All right. The Cousin Jr., which is the worst match of the evening, I awarded this prestigious award to Ivan Putski versus Mike Sharp.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I agree.
Terrible.
But there was you could have argued for others, but yeah, that's the worst.
All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP of the evening. I went with Randy Savage. I feel like he's still the biggest star that they had there tonight. I thought he looked great. Even in that match with Khan, like he just worked his ass off. Like you said, Scott, the spot with the mist was really cool. The crowd is just so into him. He's the star when Hogan's out there.
Yeah, I'm going to give like a – you're going to laugh, but I mean, for me it's Savage. But I'm going to give like 1% to Butch Reed for doing the best he could in that cage. But no, Savage is he was like the like I said he's the shining star when Hogan's somewhere else. So definitely MVP.
Yeah, Macho Man for me as well.
All right, the Uncle Elmer for the bum of the night, worst worker. I give this one to Putski as well. I just thought he was fucking terrible out there.
He was atrocious. He looked like a shoe. He's fucking terrible.
Yeah, you could have argued for others again, like Outback because he was on, but Putski was. Just a bit worse, yeah.
Yeah, I thought Jack looked better than him.
Which speaks volumes. So.
Yeah. All right, best moment, I want the finish of Savage and Khan. I thought him hitting the elbow, the crowd is going fucking bananas, and then beating up Fuji was a lot of fun. To me, that was the best highlight of the night.
Yeah, I would actually like to piggyback the missed block, too.
Yeah,
like that whole last sequence, I think, was fucking great. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that, missed that and finished.
Missed, yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll put both missed and finish of Savage vs. Khan. All right, the RCD Award, some hot competition tonight for the most juiced up.
Might be the most competition-driven ever.
I'm going to go with Morocco. I just – yeah, I mean, fuck.
I got to give it to Putski.
Let's give it to both.
He looked like a mangled shoe.
I'm going to give it to both. And Morocco and Jose Luis won it a few weeks ago, so I think we can do a split duty. Unless you get someone else, Landy.
You could almost tie Graham into it for a three-way tie, but I did write Morocco Putski as a for both of them.
Okay, we'll go with the two of them. Yeah. We may have to rename this Morocco award soon. Scott, he's won multiple. Yeah, I think we may have to. Has he won more than Arcidi? Let's see. He won at WrestleMania 3, so he's won 1, 2, 3, 4 times now. Arcidi won 1, 2, 3, 4 as well. All right, Morocco needs one more to pass Arcidi. So
I have a feeling he's not.
It's coming fast.
If it comes back at all, I think we're safe.
All right, final grade for this one. I was back and forth a little bit, but. You know, re-listening to it tonight and just, I don't know, there wasn't much there, but it wasn't a dog. Like I said, we've seen worse shows. It was some enjoyable stuff. It moved along. Bockwinkel was entertaining, a commentary. I went 4.5 for this one, Scott.
That's exactly what I'm giving, actually. I'm going to give it a 4.5, too. It was a fine watch. I thought Bockwinkel was a nice change of pace on commentary. Savage looked awesome. The cage was not offensive. The 2 out of 3 was fine. I, like you said, I think we were just expecting more. It just felt like a glorified novelty show. You got all these dregs of society there. And like I said, Dr. Zahorian had a busy night in the fucking hallway with Estrada and Terry Garvin. So, yeah, Landy, 4.5, fine for me. Not offensive, but not – I mean, we've had some hot MSG shows. This was not one of them, but I can't say this was a total drag.
Yeah, I agree. 4.5 out of 10 sounds about the right rating for this show here. Yeah.
All right, that'll do it. So we'll be back next week looking at the November show. Hopefully it goes a little bit better than this one for quality-wise. Kelly Nelson back in the booth. It's been forever since we talked to Kelly, so look forward to talking to him for that. It's actually only been 2 shows ago, but it feels like it was a while ago.
2 shows in over a month, yeah.
Right, exactly. So. Landy, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed yourself on their maiden voyage here.
Yes.
Yes, I had a great time. I'd love to appear again sometime.
Of course. No doubt. You were in the rotation, our friend. Thank you for staying up. Scott, what do you got coming up this week? Anything?
We do have a main event this week. It is the fourth quarter numbers are out. So that means, of course, our man Brandon Howard will be joining Nate and I to talk about the fourth quarter numbers. And then myself, Nate, and Chad will talk about this week's New Japan Classic match pick of the week. So we'll have that this week as well.
Tell Brandon that pi equals whatever the fuck he wants it to be.
Exactly. I agree.
So, no, that'll be a great episode. Brandon's always really good. I always enjoy talking to him back on the old defunct clotheslines and headlines.
Yes.
So glad you were able to get him on. Talk a little Q4 report. He's awesome. Check him out.
Yep.
Jeff Learns Wrestling dropped last weekend?
It was last week.
Yeah, we talked main event. That was a lot of fun. Like I said, you can hear the full ankle story. Also, check out Talkin' Pop if you haven't. Me, Jennifer, Tim, doing that interview we talked about earlier. It's on the Pop feed, PlayStation Pop feed. You should subscribe to the feed anyway if you haven't yet, but definitely check out the show and their future shows as well. They're going to be doing, I think, monthly, so it should be pretty good. Vintage Vault Refresh Series, check those out each every Thursday. We're going through Raw 1995 right now, Scott. And the Vintage Vault eBooks are also available on the right-hand side of the PlayStation.com. You can download those. We have our first couple years of Raw, pay-per-views through 93, Saturday Night's Main Event, a lot of good reading for you to kill some time with, all completely free. And if you're shopping with us, PlayStation.com/Amazon. So, for Landy, I'm Justin, that's Scott. Check us out, Facebook.com/PlayStation, Twitter, PlayStation2Nation. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone take care. See you later.
Congratulations to Liverpool.
Kangaroo, tie me down.
Revolution.